Hi, good morning, everyone. I get to start it off. Short, sweet, to the point. Well, I don't know how sweet it's going to be. I want to read Proverbs 3, some familiar scripture. It says, "My son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments. For length of days and years of life and peace they will add to you. Let not steadfast love and faithfulness forsake you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart, so you will find favor and good success in the sight of God and man. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. Be not wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. It will be healing to your flesh and refreshment to your bones." When it comes to Father's Day or Mother's Day, I think of the book written by James Dobson, Dr. James Dobson, a Christian psychologist, years ago, "Parenting Isn't for Cowards." And I think parenting has to be the hardest job on earth. And I know that I was not prepared for it in 1981 when I became a father for the first time. And I don't think I was any better prepared in 1983 when number two came along, or in 1988 when number three came along. There were a lot of things I just didn't get as a parent, and I'm not going to make any excuses, but I came from a broken home. The experts call it dysfunctional, and I can confirm that my family, my parents, did not function optimally. They didn't function truly well at all. Again, I'm not making any excuses. As I look back on what I know of their upbringing, I don't think they knew any better. They only parented in the way that they had been modeled, that had been modeled to them. And I'm afraid that I fell into that trap too. I had my own demons to deal with. Again, I won't make any excuses. I'll be honest that the Bible calls them sin remaining in you, that Paul talks about in Romans 7. That I had to deal with, and it was too often manifested in how I parented. I've often said that parenting will bring the worst in a person out, and it certainly did in me, I think. Have you ever heard it said, "I wish I'd been a grandparent before I was a parent"? Well, I do. I think I make a much better grandparent than a parent. And because of that, I really feel sorry for my children. I really do. They're great kids, and I love them, but I truly wish that I had been a better father to them. I have so many coulda, woulda, shouldas that I think about all the time. And I thank God for the song that we sang that said, "All of our failings Christ has redeemed." Okay, he's paid for them. And so I'm trying to move on, but Father's Day just is not one of my favorite holidays. So I just wanted to share part of what I learned too late as a father in no particular order. These are some of my regrets. I regret that I really craved respect from my children. And this was a real idol in my heart because I made it about me. Malachi tells us that a father's heart is supposed to be turned toward his children. Well, deep down, my heart was turned toward me, because that, though that was a hidden part of me, people couldn't really see what was going on inside, but that was a reality. I had a real issue with pride and self-centeredness, and it was often manifested in my parenting style, and I was very much of the authoritarian style like my father. I don't know if you've done those, seen those different styles of parenting. Mine was the authoritarian style like my father, and I think like his parents as well. So I regret that, you know, when they disobeyed me, I took it very personally. When they disrespected me, that idol just was not being worshipped, and so it was a real problem. And in that vein, I regret that I disciplined a lot like my parents, especially my father, too harshly at times, with too much anger. I was way too quick to spank and said things I shouldn't have said. You know, like, if you don't stop crying, I'm going to give you something to cry about. Any of you said any of that? I don't care how you feel right now. You just need to do what I tell you to do. You know, those things just don't communicate very well, that you are a loving, caring parent, but that's that authoritarian style. I regret, thirdly, that I knew more of the Bible than I put into practice. It's one thing to know the Bible, it's another to practice it. And I didn't lack knowledge, but I did lack wisdom and understanding. You know, there's a difference. It's one thing to know what to do. It's another thing to, how do you make it work with your kids? And I didn't have the insight that I have now, as I've now 64 years old, and wish I had, when I was 24, knew what I knew now. I regret, fourthly, that I focused more on my children's behaviors rather than their hearts. I just wanted my children to obey, right? They just do what I tell them to do. In fact, that was another one of those stupid things. If you would just do what I tell you to do, you know, everything would be a lot more pleasant. And I don't know how many times that I didn't take advantage of those teachable moments. You know, like Deuteronomy 6 teaches us to teach the Word of God when you're sitting down, when you're rising up, when you're walking about, just the everyday things. And those teachable moments could have come a lot better during those times when discipline was necessary. So I regret that I focused more on their behaviors, you know, just do what I tell you to do and straighten up, rather than on what was going on in their hearts. And then fifthly, the fifth regret, and I got a lot more, but I'm only going to share this one. I regret that I didn't do enough service projects with my children. As a pastor, I served a lot of people and did a lot of service, but I didn't do a lot of service projects with my kids to have them join in with me. I love how some of you at FBC are really modeling this. You're really doing an excellent job and more proficient at it than I ever was. Because children learn by doing, and they need to see their parents serving others, and they need to learn to serve others along with their parents. And I wish I'd have done that. But on an encouraging note to end with here, And there's two things that I've learned from reading Scripture. I hope there's more than two things. But as far as the parents and children, two things from the history of the kings. Just finished recently reading the kings, and it's always a refreshing thing to read, sometimes depressing. But there's two things I learned from reading the history of the kings about fathers, about parenting. Okay, number one, even the best kings, the best fathers, had the worst children. Hezekiah was an example of that. You look at Hezekiah, he fathered Manasseh. Manasseh was probably the worst king that Judah had. Brought all kinds of idolatry and sin into the nation, and they never recovered from it. The best, even the best fathers can have the worst children. But even the best, then the second thing, is even the worst kings, the worst fathers, can have the best children. You see, Ahaz was the father of Hezekiah. And there are others there who were. It clearly says they did not do what was right in the sight of the Lord. And then the son that succeeded them said he did always what was right in the sight of the Lord. So you can have that dynamic. So I've learned this about parenting, about being a father. There are no guarantees with parenting. You can do what you think are all the right things, and your children may not follow the Lord. You can also make a mess of your parenting, and God can do a much better job, and your children can follow the Lord wholeheartedly in spite of you. And the important thing to learn is that you trust the Lord always with all your heart. You don't lean on your own understanding about parenting. In all your ways, acknowledge Him. He will direct your steps. You trust in God's grace, because that's the only thing that's going to get you through your parenting. That's the only thing you can rely on. God's grace is sufficient for any parenting situation that you and I will ever face. Thank God I'm a grandparent now, and His grace is greater than any failure on your part as a parent. And to realize that any success that our kids might have, all that glory goes to God anyway. All right, thank you. At this point, Mike's going to come.
Everything you said there, Terry, it's like sometimes I think you've got it figured out, or we have it figured out, and the Lord does the kids still get blessings for God in spite of us. I think that's the funny thing we learn as parents. As much as we think we may have it together, we have our failings, but God has a way of patching it up and making it right. This week, I had something else planned, but someone sent me an article this week, and I thought I would read a good bit of that, not read a whole article, but share a good bit from it. There's an article from Desiring God called Not Safe But Good by Greg Morse, and it's called from the Desiring God webpage. Being a father of three has been a real privilege for me. I love my children, of course, like all fathers. I want the same for my children as you do. I want them to have an education and to be healthy, to have their own families hopefully one day, and you know, we can go on and on with that list of things you want to see your parents do. They're all different, and they all have different desires and wants and different needs, and I want to be able to meet those and also see them, you know, grow into who God wants them to be. But most importantly, I want them to know the Lord, as the hymn says, and to be a true son and daughter of the Lord. And I think back of things when places I've traveled, I've seen signs of places that says like a something and sons, you know, radiator shop or carpentry, and these kids grow up having like an apprenticeship with their father. They learn to do what the trade their father has, the things their father would do, and they want to be, they understudy for years and years and years, and eventually take the business or whatever they do over. our family does our level best to make sure the kids read their Bibles and pray and serve the Lord in some capacity. And like, you know, Terry said, we do try to make sure that we serve together with them. That was something before we had kids we wanted to do to make sure it wasn't, that church wasn't something that just mom and dad did. It was something that we did together. So they see it done and modeled. And like I said, we of course don't have it all the answers for that, but we do our best with them. And I noticed that, you know, kids need fathers to encourage them and lead them down the right path and listen to them when they hit the tough parts of life. I think it's easy, like Terry said, to tell them to do what I say and listen to what I tell you to do if you just do this. And that's easy to fall into. I think the harder thing to do is that sometimes when you see that stress in them, to sit there and listen, like, why are they doing what they're doing? Like, why, the last several days you've not done whatever. What's going on? Let's talk about this for a minute. And then sometimes it comes out. So that's things I've had to learn to do is just take my time with them. A lot of times when people see pictures of my family, we'll post things on Facebook on occasion, they'll say things like, oh, how beautiful your kids are, and oh, look how tall Violet is, or how beautiful Laurel is, or how handsome Noah is, or whatever the adjective they use for them. Such a nice family. And nice is a word you hear, and what does that mean anyway? What's your perception of that? When you consider a Christian, a husband, an upstanding church man, a godly man, what qualities come to mind? In this article, Greg Morse, I'm going to read a little bit from that. He says, traits such as generous, thoughtful, agreeable. Is he quick to listen, ready to sympathize? Does he speak gently and serve graciously? Does he routinely defer to others' preferences? But if this side of godliness is all that we are, it should also strike us as uncomfortably wrong. And I think as a man, that's something we've had that was a hard thing for me to learn, because when I left where I came from and went to another church, and here I saw something different. And I saw that there was not much of a need for guys like me where I was at before. Just coming out of the 82nd Airborne, I wasn't a self-proclaimed like tough guy or nothing like that. But God made me a certain way. And I got there and I saw, I really just don't fit here. I believe the same things they believe, but what I'm seeing is what these guys do isn't what I think that God would have me do. So I left and I wound up at FEC, and I've learned how to blend those two together with some good discipleship and some good examples and good teaching. So godly men will indeed need to demonstrate compassion, humility, and service, and love. This is true, but is the whole truth? Is it the whole truth? Has the ideal of modern manhood, the modern church, just become a general shadow of what God made man to be? I remember I've been at FEC for a couple years, and I got to go to Bolivia for a mission trip, and here I am with Terry and Tim. We're going to Bolivia, and these are guys who have stuff going. They were younger men at the time, but still taking time out of their schedules to go out here and do this in a place that isn't the easiest place to go. I remember one night, I forget where we were, but these two or three group of guys came in. They had like jeans on and boots. They had these Bolivian jackets that were like kind of their bright color, and they had this little band of color around them. I was like, and they just looked different. There was something about those guys. There's kind of a ruggedness about them. And I asked Judy, I said, maybe Dan, I said, who are those guys and what do they do? He's like, oh, they're a contact team. They go out into the jungle and make contact with these tribes who've probably never seen anybody outside that tribe before. And I was like, well, I mean, that's dangerous, right? They're like, yeah, it's dangerous. I mean, you could get killed. I was like, well, do they carry guns or anything? They're like, no, that would really work against what we're trying to do here if they shot one of the guys. You know? It's like, I don't know about that, man. That's a little crazy. But I like that the fact that those guys, here were some guys who were, you know, putting it all on the line for the Lord. And I think even like, with not to embarrass Jesse, but when I first year was going to Siberia to be a missionary, I was like, man, Siberia, good gracious, why couldn't you pick like Hawaii or something, man? But I mean, that's like the Lord, the gospel, the Lord, people need the Lord there as well. So I'm thankful for people to do so, things like that. And Morse goes on to say, it says, when we teach about godly masculinity, do qualities like strength, initiative, zeal, and courage make our list? When we assess men for church office and we look for small group leaders and godly mentors, do we commend men who would make good shepherds? And think about this. We talked about this at Mill Creek last week. Industrious, passionate, resilient men able to corral sheep and willing to combat wolves. And he continues, endangers a species of line-hearted masculinity that bears Aslan's description. Not safe, but good. The simply nice guy says nothing uncomfortable, rallies no charge, and shows little, if any, initiative. His pressure to be convictionless, passionless, perhaps even Christless, if but subdued. But is that how God created man? Instead of blunting his sharp edges, God has a different solution for creating good men. Rebirth, looking to Christ, and training in righteousness. Godliness must balance our own personal nature. God made you, if you're a man, God made you how you are. And there's things that he doesn't want you to, he's not trying to knock those edges off that he made you to be. We achieve maturity as Christian men through exercising the fruit of the Spirit. Kindness, self-control, and compassion should be woven into our strength and courage and determination rather than removing it altogether. Again, back to that, the nice thing is great, but there's things that have to be put in that to serve God. And I can't stress enough the fruit of the Spirit with love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, and self-control. And exercise them places outside of where it's comfortable for us. I can do that here with you guys, because y'all are believers. Y'all kind of, we live by the same belief system and the same, you know, code of conduct to a degree. But what about being a place of peace in the storm of a kid's life? Exercising self-control, of staying in the struggle to help someone when everything in you wants to walk away or give up on them. How about being kind to someone that maybe doesn't think all that much of you? Such men, gentle and strong, present a paradox to the world. And I think about when you, I don't watch a lot of television, but I do watch football. And sometimes the commercials come on, like for ones for Chevy trucks, and there's this guy on there, and I'm like, I wouldn't ask that guy about a truck. Honestly, you know, like he's never been in a four-wheel drive. He's got real, you know, tight jeans on and cute shoes and this nice little jacket and his hair is perfect. But I remember back in the days of, like, you know, I grew up with the guys like Robert Conrad with the Everett banner, like, go ahead, knock it off, I dare you. You know, those are the kind of things I saw as a kid. So, you know, it's confusing for people to see because we see that image portrayed. And I'm like, I don't know anybody really like that as a guy. So, but the men I know are guys who, like, the men in this church, the men who go and do things, the men who, you know, aren't trying to be the nice, you know, cute guy the world likes. I think that's really a dangerous thing for us to have to be. We don't want to be hated by the world, but I do think we have to speak the truth. And there's consequences, and there's cost of that as well. You know, it says, his hands build up his household, and wrestles with his boys, sips tea with his daughters, and grip the hilt of the sword against agents of darkness. You know, again, like the whole armor of God in Ephesians 6:10-20. He has a godly warrior who sleeps in his armor, fierce and meek and good wherever he finds himself. What I really fear about the whole being nice thing is that the goal of being nice strips away some of the things we need to do to the work of God as he's called us to do. And nice is good. I'm not saying go out and be a jerk to people or be harsh or cruel. That's not what I'm saying to do at all. But the shelter of being nice keeps us away from the discomforts of following Christ. And that's the truth. I think the nice thing sometimes to do, you know, it's, you don't want to say the wrong thing or upset someone, but if you look with Jesus in his life, he did a lot of things like that. You know, nice is nothing of spine, of edge, of valor. It can say little of righteousness or purpose. It doesn't require courage or conviction, and no willingness to make enemies with the wicked. Jesus warns against this type of neutrality, and he's in Luke 6:26. He says, "Woe to you when all people speak well of you, for their followers did also to the prophets." I think about John 8 with a woman who was caught in adultery, and you look at that whole scene. I'm not going to read, I don't have time to read the whole thing, but I think about that scene a lot, and as an early believer, and picture in that, I wish somebody would make a film of this and do it right. And here's Jesus at the temple, and here I picture this big mass of men or Pharisees grabbing this woman saying, she's caught in adultery, what should we do with her? They're going to stone her. I mean, if it happened to you now, what would you do? I mean, here's this bunch of guys come up doing this, and what does Jesus freak out and run away? No, he challenges them. He stands up and he defends her, and he says to them, he went down and he wrote in the ground, but when they heard it, they went away one by one, begging the older ones, and Jesus was left alone with a woman standing before him. So he went to bat for her. That could have gone the other way with them. They could have tried to stone Jesus, and that's not what happened in the story, but think about that. Times that those failures in my life are things like that when I should have stood up, when I should have said something when someone was doing something wrong. Those are the things I look back on that I shouldn't have been nice. I should have stood up and said, this isn't going to happen. If it costs me someone to beat my head, and it just does, but I'm going to do the right thing here. And we have to be willing to do that as men, especially in front of our children. And the thing is, we have to be careful with too, is we don't want to overcorrect on this and become this, like, you know, a machoistic, tough guy that's hard on our kids and harsh to them, being overbearing. That's everywhere. You see it all the time. That's alive and well in the world. It's even in churches it happens too. We must not exchange good but not strong for strong but not good. We can't go forward in the flesh instead of being led by the Spirit. We must not settle for feeling like men in our own strength. That's the most dangerous thing we can do. We must become better men through divine power and self-sacrifice. You think about stories like, you know, Moses and David. I think about Nehemiah. I mean, he did all these things. He loved the Lord. He loved the things of the Lord. And he went out there and, you know, hated to see those walls torn and wanted to rebuild the city. And he did. And he had a lot of adversity facing him. It wasn't like he was, you know, here comes Nehemiah to do what he said, because he's a pretty nice fellow. No, he'll fight you if you mess with him. Those guys are going to build this wall. And there's a whole, you know, world outside. Go outside this doors, and it tries to skew manhood and what fatherhood is supposed to look like. I tell you, I see it all the time. We're at Mill Creek. I look into the faces and read the text of a dozen or more teenage boys who are looking for a father figure to step into their lives and with, you know, compassionate strength lead them through these last critical years of childhood into adulthood. I've got kids who've lost their fathers, kids who don't know who their father is, but the kids that see it, they've seen something different with the relationship with our kids. They've seen men who are trying to live godly lives in front of them and they care about them. And that's really, there's a shortage of that. So, and I know that, you know, there's not enough, sometimes it seems there's not enough people in the world to meet this need. Billy Graham, Martha posted a thing on Facebook about, you know, Billy Graham's talking about how undervalued in society fathers are. I mean, it's easy to make a child, no doubt about that. People are more than willing to do that, but raising one's a whole different story. And I think that's the hard thing. The courage is saying that, okay, this is my kid and I'm going to take care of it. You know, fatherhood should be it's a choice, and there's hard things you have to do. And I think about kids like that out there who've never had it and how much they really, really want it. Because if you look at it, none of it makes sense. And just to be kind of straightforward about it is that when we first came out there, there was a lot of just not that age group just feeling us out because they're older, you know, black kids, and here we are, a bunch of older white guys, and it just doesn't fit the thing. But I think they saw something different. These guys really care. And it's been some time of getting to know each other and things like that, but it's just an odd match. But I think it's the society just doesn't add up. It should be, you know, they're blacks ministering their own color or whatever. I don't think that's the case. I don't think that's right, but I think they see a definite something different. People do care about them out there in spite of all the stuff I've heard and have had done to us out there, and we're still there. And that's what those boys need to see, that these guys aren't give up on us. So I give you men a charge this morning, if whether you're a father or you're not. You may have grown kids who are out of your house, or you may have small ones that are still under your roof, and that's, you got to focus on that too. You don't want to serve and lose and take a chance for lose your own kids. But God knows those things, and God rewards you for that too. There's times I'm not there. I look at my kids and think I haven't spent a lot of time with them this week because I've been doing this or that. And you have to be careful of that too. You have to definitely make time for your children. But if you have, you know, kids under your own roof, you can still serve and do these things. So look around you in your life for those people who are still kind of clinging to whatever debris they can hang on to in their life and just kind of floating out there in the sea, lost with no one really to guide them. Show them some kindness and mercy. Give them a meal and a listening ear. Go through scriptures with them and patiently lead them. And I'm telling you, man, patiently lead them. That's the thing. It's going to go south on you a lot. It's going to swerve out of control quite a bit. But they need consistency. They need to see that no matter what happens, this man's still there. This woman's still there to help me. I'll close out with this. I've kind of been over the map. I want to give Vince a chance. I don't want to take too long, so I apologize if I spoke too fast and didn't quite get through everything. And I'll read this from Charles Spurgeon, and he could say it much better than I could ever say it. And it says, Jesus is the most magnanimous of captains. There never was like him among the choices of princes. He is always to be found in the thickest part of battle. When the wind blows cold, he always takes the bleak side of the hill. The heaviest end of the cross lies ever on his shoulders. If he bids us carry a burden, he carries it also. If there is anything that is gracious, generous, kind, and tender, it's lavish and superabundant in love. Abundant in love, you can always find it in him. That's from Charles Spurgeon, Prince of Preachers. I read a book a few years ago about this guy who was a scout in Vietnam. They were talking about sometimes they would get shot up pretty bad and want someone to come pull them out, and a lot of groups wouldn't come do it. There was a group of helicopter pilots called the King's Men. And if the King's Men heard it, they would get there and they would pull guys out. If it cost them two or three birds to get them out of there, they would do it. So to be one of those guys, it was hard to get into that group and be one of the King's Men. And I thought about this in this part of the story he wrote, but it says, the King's Men will be found with Christ in the thickest part of the battle. They'll resent wasting their lives, venturing nothing, growing warm for nothing, exercising no initiative, taking no stands, building no fortitude of faith, engaging in no spiritual battle, carrying no burdens, planting no flags on unconquered hilltops. The men of this king, for the very reason they despise playing with foam swords against the forces of evil, create the safest culture for their women and children. Dangerous men under God, holding one another accountable, will not stand idly by as the bearers maul those who they should rather protect and nourish. Meek and fierce, tough and tender, leaders and servants, not safe but good, men like Jesus. So, thank you for...
Terry asked us to speak about being a Christian father. And in my growing up, I didn't grow up in a Christian home, so I didn't have that influence. There's a lot of ditto to what Terry and Mike both said, but I didn't grow up in a Christian home, so I didn't have that. When we got married, neither one of us were Christians. We had our first son, neither one of us were Christians. Now, I was seeking, I didn't know it at the time, but then I was working through things, and probably about a year and a half after our first son was born, I got saved. So trying to be a Christian parent or father was new. We were both learning at the same time, me and my son. So it was a learning experience for both of us, I guess. But the verse that I have that I was going to read from is Matthew 7, verse 9. What man is there among you who, if his son asks for bread, will give him a stone, or if he asks for a fish, will give him a serpent? I was going to bring a fish and a serpent and a piece of bread, but the idea is, even me, who I'm not a perfect parent, not a perfect person, but I have a Father in heaven who will help me, who will aid me. So working with my kids, when I look back, we have DVDs, I guess, that I can remember. I can see it. I almost want, like, I should put it on here. We had some great devotions. I mean, playing the guitar, singing songs, having, you know, kids coming to church and reading the Bible and seeing them on their bunk beds and all in the bedroom and, you know, quizzing them about what we learned in the Bible. And it was just wonderful, you know, starting out, growing up like that. And it was great stuff. And I had my problems, just like, I mean, what Terry was describing, regrets, and I was tougher than I should have been maybe with my kids. But we did work through things, and we went through these devotions and books. We have a Bible that's all torn up that we were reading through, and then we would do these object lessons. You know, you take a tube of toothpaste, and you say, like, whoever can squeeze it out the fastest wins. And they all squeeze it out onto a paper plate. And then you say, you got to put it all back in now. Put it back in the tube. And, you know, the words you say, you can't get back. Things like that. So we would go through these things. And I remember going with, we'd even, you know, with small groups, doing things with the other kids in the small group. We were doing it together. And, yeah, I remember taking parenting classes. And, I don't know, we were a big group in the church at that time taking parenting classes. And it seems like then years later, we look back and say, what were we thinking? What were they teaching? Those people, like, I think their pictures are in the post office or something. Like, they're like, oh, who were we listening to? But in the whole thing, we had good hearts. We were trying to do what was right. And I'm certainly flawed in who I am. But as I was learning as a Christian, I was teaching my kids. And my greatest asset, I guess, is that if they could watch me, not that I was doing everything right, but they knew I was trying to, and we were coming to church, and we were reading and learning and growing, and they knew that I was trying to do what was right, so I was hopefully a good model. I was a role model to them, that they would see that I was not one person here and another person there, and, you know, you see me at church, and I'm like this, but boy, when I get home, I was trying to be consistent that way, and it was almost like we'd watch movies, right? And then you watch a movie, and kids all go to bed. It's 9 o'clock. Now we can watch that movie. And it's like, well, that hit me. And I said, hold it. So I can watch all this bad stuff, but they can't. Well, what if I just watch PG movies? What's going to happen to me? Or why do I have to have this, you know, the difference? And so I was growing and learning, and they were hopefully seeing it in me. And as we went through things, yeah, I think our hearts were right. I realized that God, these children are God's more than they're mine. And, you know, we put the word, we sowed the seeds, and in reality, I have no guarantee if they're going to be believers or not. That's not my, I sow the seed. I do what is right because I do what is right, not because I'm going to get this prize at the end. I do it because it's right. And I had my tough times where I was learning and saying, you know, like I would try to do a project, and they'd have to get out of my way because they weren't doing it right. And then it's like, okay, I'm going to let them do the project. And they would do it pretty good. But then, and I'd say, what a great job you did, except, but you didn't, and I'd have, and I took away all of that praise. And so as I'm learning, and I wish what Terry had mentioned, I wish now that I'm a grandparent, I could go back and be, because I'm certainly much more patient, much more loving, much more, I've matured, and it would have been nice to be there then, but I wasn't. But I love my kids, and they're great, and I've seen them learn on their own, grow, go to college, and I got books that say, you know, when they go to college, you better give them this book because they're going to get all messed up, and they went to college and learned things, but they're all thinking individuals. They can't take my faith and make it their own. They have to make it their own. They have to learn, and they are. They're all learning, and my thing is that God says in this verse that I'm reading, it's about prayer, ask, seek, and knock. And so we look to God for our help. He is the one who's going to make this happen. If my kids turn out to be the greatest thing ever, I can't take a boast about that. And if they turn out to have problems, I don't know that I need to put that all on me either. I'm trying to do what is right, and that's that. And God knows that. And so I guess my encouragement would be that as long I want to work harder on myself than I do on others, my wife, my kids. I mean, it's a maturity thing, I guess. And I am certainly have grown over the years. And I'm going to just be short, and I'm going to say that that's all I have, that God is good.
All the time.
All the time.
All right.